The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
4 championships in the last 5 years. Yeah, I'd say it's today's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through, we gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through, we gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, golden, golden.
Bay's Golden Days podcast number 31. Marcus Boucher, Harney Graywall back to cover NBA All-Star Weekend. That's right, we have approached the midway point of the NBA season. We're going to talk about everything that happened during this All-Star break, all the big storylines in the NBA first half. We got to talk about the Warriors being the Bay's Golden Days. Plenty of storylines involving the Warriors, including Kevin Durant versus Russell Westbrook. We'll talk about all that drama, and then we'll talk about Russell Westbrook versus James Harden, the battle for the triple doubles, who's going to be the MVP. We'll look at all the candidates from the first half, including LeBron James crying and begging for some more talent. We're going to get to all those storylines. But of course, to kick it off, we got to talk about the Golden State Warriors, because this is the Bay's Golden Days. And surprise, surprise, the Warriors are in first place, sitting at 47-9. Not quite where they were last year, but they still are on pace for 69 wins, and they are outscoring teams by more than 12 points per game. That's on pace to set an NBA record, and they have 8 wins by more than 30 points. That's only 3 shy of an NBA record set by the 71-72 Milwaukee Bucks. Man, this Warrior team is coming out high scoring with these 4 All-Stars. It looks like anybody can shoot and score on any given night. Harney, my man, the number one Warriors fan I know, break it down for me. What have you seen from the Warriors in the first half of the season?
I've seen progression, and that is where it is key, because at the beginning of the year when we did our early NBA podcast, I said, we are going to get losses. Don't expect them to have a better record than they did last year. Look, we already have 9 losses, and it's only the All-Star break. But what we've done together as a collective unit is grow, and that is the best thing. Have you seen how well we are starting to play when it came down to the All-Star break? Besides that little loss we had in the second game before the break, but still, this team is clicking right now, and look how well they are meshing. Kevin Durant is so selfless, and he just fit in so well. And JaVale McGee taking over for Zaza in the late, he's been playing well. Been on Shaq and the Fool a couple times. I know Shaq loves that fool, and he always ends up putting on him. He put him on there for his birthday. I was like, dude, you can't be doing that. Even though he did something, I was like, that's just some JaVale McGee stuff.
JaVale.
But he hustles. He gets up to the boards. He fights for every possession, and I love it because we need a big. That's the only spot that we do not thrive in, because we have the shooters. We can drive and kick. The pick and roll is just phenomenal. It's honestly a little bit unfair, but as a Warrior fan, I'm never going to say that. I just laugh. But for me, the defense. Ron Adams has these guys clicking. That was one of the biggest reasons I was so happy. And I guarantee Ron Adams is one of the reasons Kevin Durant joined this team, because he had him in OKC and he trained him. And Ron Adams is the defensive mastermind. This guy has them playing with historic defensive numbers. They are almost leading in every category. And this is not their offense. Their offense is from their defense. They even know their defense creates their offense on the outlet and their fast break. And that's how they are going to get it done. But at the end of the day, Zaza and JaVale McGee have surprised me the most, because they've been able to keep the paint as solid as they have been throughout these games, and they are just progressing one by one, and we are clicking. And the X factor to me this season, that who hasn't had a lot of games, which I cannot wait to see back, because he was doing so well with the passing and playing that four position, is David West. He was clicking so well, hitting the mid-range, and he was just delivering the balls in great passes. I almost felt like it was a smaller Bogut giving the balls with the chemistry already aligned. So for me, this team is looking good, and this is where I projected them to be. I expected them to get losses. I want the losses. Look at last year. We didn't get any losses, and look what happened. We ended up not winning. So to me, those wins don't matter, because at the end of the day, it's the playoffs, and this is the final stretch, and this is the time to get all the kinks out. I don't care how many games you lose. We got to get that number one seed, because San Antonio, nobody talks about them. They're only 4 games away from the number one seed.
Yeah,
they're 43-13.
Yeah, the Spurs are right there on their back, no doubt about it. But you got to think about it. The Warriors have not been even playing their best basketball all year. They still are gelling, and they're still sitting here at 47-9. And you said it perfectly. Everybody knows about the offense, but their defense has been huge this year. And you mentioned Zaza. You mentioned JaVale McGee. That was huge with Andre Iguodala influencing him, former teammates from Denver, and saying, hey, we want JaVale. Let's give him a chance. And he is coming huge, and he's turning Golden State into a little bit of a lob city, and he's putting up plays left and right. And you talked about the big men have got to step up after losing Bogut and everybody, but one of the big men is Kevin Durant, and his defense has improved so much over the years. And I've always thought to myself, you see Kevin Durant, he's near 7 foot, he should be out here playing lockdown defense and getting blocked left and right, but everybody's like, oh no, he's too skinny, he's too scrawny, blah blah blah. I see Kristaps Porzingis coming to the league and start getting blocks left and right, so don't tell me nothing about the skinny and scrawniness, because Kevin Durant is playing his best season by far on offense and on defense. He is the first player ever to hit over 100 three-pointers and have over 90 blocks before the All-Star break. He's already got more blocks this season than he did all of last year, so that defense is huge. He is helping protect the rim because he is, like you said, that 7-footer. When they go to that death lineup with replacing him for that Harrison Barnes with Draymond Green, Kevin Durant is the biggest man on the floor, so if he can help protect the rim, this defense is doing wonders. And you want to talk about defense, Draymond Green is doing it big, and I love his attitude because he just wants to go out and win. He's not complaining about stats. He doesn't want to put up points. Look at it. He went out and put up a triple-double without the points. This man put up the rebounds, the steals, the blocks, the assists. He was doing everything that game. It has been unbelievable, and his defense truly has led to great offense from this squad.
And I hate it how people say, oh, wow, that's pathetic. How do you not get a triple-double and not have points? You could have got a quadruple-double. Do you see how much we're winning by? Do you see that he knows that he does not need to shoot at all unless it's just wide open and the clock's running down? At the beginning of the season, he was still in his last year's mode, thinking he's that number three, taking those shots. But then he realized KD is unstoppable. To me, for all these years, he's always been so underrated just because he makes it look so easy and he puts up the production every single night in and out. When I see this man have 30, I'm like, when did he score this? It's like just continuous, and he's just so effective. 50-40-90 club, just like Steph. But for me, Steph has got to get a little more consistent. He's had a little wishy-washy games with the shot, and I just need him to be prepared because at the end of the day, he's the leader of this team, and he has to lead this team. Not the vocal leader, not the heart. That's Draymond. But Steph is going to have the rock in his hands at all time, and we can't have what happens in the finals and he gets locked up because of little bumps and stuff that the refs aren't going to call, which is bullshit. But it's going to happen, and it's a physical game. It's a playoffs. You got to let them play. But for me, Kevin Durant, how many easy dunks has he had?
Man, he's getting all over the field with Steph Curry, the way he is setting everything up for him.
It's so easy for him when you have to space that out with that many shooters, especially on a pick and roll. It's so dirty. And you mentioned JaVale McGee. He literally turned us into a little lob city. This man is scoring over 60% of his points on dunks. And best believe, Oracle goes dumb whenever they see that. And I honestly go dumb from my seat just because I'm like, I don't expect you to do anything except make Shaqton the fool and make me give me a laugh. But now you're making me so happy in a different way to smile.
Right.
Because this guy, the hustle, I absolutely love it. I cannot express how much I love his hustle. Going up for every board, falling down for the loose balls, and just overall wanting to win. And that is a guy we're going to need in the playoffs to come up big for us on the boards, because he will be in the second unit because Zaza needs to play in the front unit. But all this time that he's getting and all this extra time by winning these games is putting in that second unit. I don't know how many times the second unit pretty much almost played the fourth quarter. And those minutes have been huge, especially with all the injuries late coming up to the All-Star break. It's going to be wonders for us in the playoffs because what's our weakest part? Is our second unit.
The big man, the second unit, exactly. And JaVale McGee has been huge. He went from Shaqton a fool to straight Shaqton on fools, like straight throwing down dunks left and right. But I want to go back to what you mentioned with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and this ball movement on this team. A lot of people are looking saying, hey, Steph, he's not putting up those MVP numbers. He's having a bit of a down year. But Kevin Durant truly is playing like the superstar on the team because he's having his best season of his career. He's shooting his best field goal percentage at 53.9%. He's got 8.3 rebounds a game. That's a career high, and 1.7 blocks per game. And it's all being set up by Steph Curry, because while he's not putting up points, he's not getting the highest triple-double assist numbers. They're getting ball movement. I've always said the hockey assist. The Warriors always seem to be leading the league in team assists. But let me tell you something about Steph Curry. He is out there setting screens as a point guard. People say, what are you talking about? Well, when he's trying to get defenders away from KD, away from players, because they're so worried about double-teaming him on the three-pointer, he is now setting screens, and he has twice as many screens as the next point guard in the league. So he's setting up easy shots for Draymond. Draymond, easy shots for Klay, easy shots for KD, and he is making it go around. And you talked about it. He's on some nights, he's off some night. He finally broke his streak where he went 0-for-10 against the Lakers, and his consistent three-point streak ended. But what do you know? He comes back the next night and breaks the NBA record by hitting 13 three-pointers versus the Pelican. How does he do these type of things? But Stephen Curry, if he gets more consistently, he's already doing a lot of things for this offense. If he starts going off too, and then you got the boy Klay Thompson who can just come out and put up 60 points in 29 minutes like it's nothing. This team truly is deadly with all these offensive weapons.
Yeah, and most people before the season would be like, oh, how are they going to share the shots? Well, you know what the funny thing is? They're all averaging. Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson are all averaging 17 shots a game. You know what that is? Unselfish play, because guess what? When you got the shooters, guess what? Throw it up. And what's the motto for shooters? Keep on shooting. And they all know that. Klay can get hot at any second. Steph can get hot at any second. And Kevin Durant can. And about the screens, this is what Steph Curry reiterated after, I believe, our fourth loss. He said, we need to go to the pick and roll, because he even said it. It's almost unfair. When you have Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Draymond, Klay, and when that ball movement, and you have Dre up top controlling that ball and bringing that number four, number five, all the way out of the paint, that's huge. And that's how Kevin Durant just gets that easy dime and just flies in and makes it look so easy. I just want him to stick that tongue out and be like Jordan, because he literally is so lanky that it doesn't even look like he's jumping, but he slams it so hard because the ball's so goddamn high. And I absolutely love it. I love the way we're playing, because the pick and roll is what is going to be our bread and butter, because it's too difficult to not double or go under the screen to stop that three. And if you give any of these shooters 1 second of daylight, it's over. And for Kevin Durant, it's different. That man can create a shot at any point. He could drive you. He could post you up and hit it from the back with his back facing the basket. He can look you straight in the eye and just drill it, and he can just pull up at any point or anywhere on the court. And that's why this team is destined to win. If we do not, it's going to be the biggest disappointment ever.
Yeah, it truly is unstoppable when you look at the skill set of athletes, the skill set of shooters that this Warriors team has on the floor with four All-Stars at a time. You want to talk about pick and roll with just Draymond and Klay, Draymond and Steph, that's fine. But then you throw in Kevin Durant using his body for the first time in his life, setting screens, and you're talking about having to pick and choose. What am I going to do? Close out on Steph? If I don't, that's too much room. He shoots a three. KD, is he going to cut to the bucket, or he can fade back to the three-point line? There's no answer to this puzzle. It is just too easy. And you talked about it. They're each getting the equal amount of shots, and that's just unselfish basketball. And that's one of the big things that Kevin Durant said about him wanting to come to the Warriors was unselfish basketball. Russell Westbrook and some of the reporters took it as a shot, saying that he was saying bad things about the Thunder and how they were selfish and how it gets back to Russell Westbrook. But it's true, because Russell Westbrook, we talked about this feud between him and Kevin Durant that's been so huge this year. Russell Westbrook is having a great year, no doubt about it. He's averaging a triple-double. The guy is outstanding. He's averaging 31, 11, and 10, but he's also holding the ball. He's accountable for 41% of the Thunder's possession, and he's having multiple turnovers all game long. Me and Harneet like to joke around every time we see him with the triple-double. We're waiting for the quadruple-double with the turnovers, and that just shows you the different styles in play between Kevin Durant leaving the Thunder and now being on the Warriors.
For me, Westbrook, yeah, he's playing phenomenal. I got to give him that, but honestly, I hate watching him play because, one, he turns the ball over all the time. And as you said, he accounts for 41% of their possessions. And does that even count him being on the bench?
I should just point it out. That 41% is an NBA record, breaking Kobe Bryant's record of 38%.
And I guarantee that was the year when Kobe's best players were Smush Parker and Kwame Brown. And he even said it. He's like, I got Smush Parker and Kwame Brown. Why the fuck would I pass? And that's just real talk. This is basketball. This is a business, and you got to get the rings. And this is what Russell Westbrook, I just think that he will never win a ring, and this is a bold statement, but I just believe that because I don't know any players that are going to want to play with a man who already has his mind made up right when he gets the ball when he's dribbling down the court. He already knows, especially if he gets in a heated conversation, you know he's a fiery person. If he starts getting into like a Patrick Beverley type person who's just in your ear, just getting at you and just riling you up, he's going to try and be the man how he always tries to do in the All-Star game. You know he loves the spotlight, and this man just goes. He's crazy. He's a freaking nature athlete. I'll give him that, and he's great. But the turnovers is what I hate because, one, a turnover is my most hated thing in basketball because you do not get a shot up, and you just give the ball away to the other team. And if you don't get a shot up, that's the worst thing. If you miss a shot, okay, understandable, you know, as people miss. But if you don't even get a shot up, you are hurting your team because how many points are you allowing the other team to score? They started off hot, but they've definitely cooled down going into the All-Star break because I just don't think that he can hold this up for the rest of the season and get them there as high of a seed that he wants to be.
That's going
to
be the thing about Russell Westbrook. He is that alpha male type of personality. He wants the ball. He wants to score at all times. He doesn't care if it's an all-star game. He doesn't care if it's a pickup game at the YMCA. He doesn't care if you're playing NBA Street. He's going to go full speed 100% all the time, and he's putting up amazing stats, but it's going to be interesting to see if he's going to be able to have that consistency, because he had 27 triple-doubles before the all-star break. He's trying to break Oscar Robertson's record of 41 triple-doubles, and he's putting up these huge stats, but you got to look at it. The Thunder is still sitting there at seventh place in the West. What are the moves doing him? Putting up these huge godly numbers. It's not getting him a top four seed. It's not going to get him home court advantage. It is going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But he's not even the only man putting up these godly triple-double numbers, because there's another man who might have a beard who want to put some fear into a couple people's heart, and that is James Harden. He's trying to go for the king of the triple-doubles. You want to talk about high scoring this year? There's been more 30-point games, more 40-point games, more triple-doubles ever in an NBA season. There's already been 70 triple doubles this season, and a big part of it is Russell Westbrook and James Harden. James Harden is averaging 29, 12, and 8, almost right there with Russell Westbrook, and averaging a triple double. He leads the NBA in assists, and he is creating 56.5 points per game. That is on pace for an NBA record, and his Rockets team really is having a huge year trying to model what the Warriors have had so much success in. They're on pace to actually beat the Warriors' record for scoring the most three-pointers in a year. I mean, this guy has had 5 40-point triple-doubles. James Harden is having one hell of a year. I mentioned it on our NBA preseason podcast with him moving the point guard now with Mike D'Antoni running that offense. This team is shooting left and right. They got a few more shooters now with Ben Gordon, and even Lou Williams joined his team. This Houston Rockets team really is trying to copy the success route that the Warriors took. What do you think about James Harden shooting up a million threes a game but still leading the league in assists?
He is definitely my first half MVP because he does not turn the ball over as much as Russell Westbrook. And I'll take those 2 rebounds less a game if you're going to keep me the ball for 5 more possessions than Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook's averaging almost 7 turnovers a game with only 12 assists, I believe. So that's not even a 2-to-1 ratio. As a point guard, that is terrible. You're supposed to be the floor general. But Harden has the mind of a true point guard, because when I watch him play, I can tell he's trying to run the offense and get everybody else involved. And what he's lucky, which Russell Westbrook doesn't have, and that's majority of his assists. When he drives, the defense collapse because they're so great at driving and drawing the foul. You have to be worried about that because they're so good close to the basket, because they're so explosive, both of them. But James Harden has Eric Gordon, who's had a revival, the three-point champ this year. I'm so happy for him because I remember watching him at Oklahoma, and then he got so many bad injuries, never could play a full season. So it was nice to see him go out there, except not beat Clay, but Clay messed up. I ain't going to get in that. And then he has Ryan Anderson, might have been the best pickup they had in the offseason, because that man has been drilling for him. And have a stretch four like that, it's so difficult for defenses to even guard him out there, because you know that he's going to stay out there the entire time, and it just opens up the paint for Harden. And what he's done so far at 48-18, nobody expected this. Nobody expected him to do this, especially with the first-year head coach Mike D'Antoni for the Rockets. And Mike D'Antoni, you have to give him the props for making that switch and putting Harden and giving him the control of the ball and having the trust in him to not pull a Westbrook and be a true floor general, because that's what he's doing. And that's what I love about James Harden, because when I watch him, I just see him trying to get teammates involved. When I see Russell Westbrook, I just see him trying to run the offense himself, and then it just happens to get his other teammates involved when the defense collapses. And that's not the way you got to play, because the majority of the time, it looks like he's wild, even though you know he's just explosive and has control. But there's a lot of times where I'm like, what are you doing?
Right. I mean, you look at it, James Harden definitely has the benefit of having those extra shooters on his team, like you said, where he can drive and kick out to. But Russell Westbrook, when you're holding the ball for that long, and most of the times it's just isolation plays, it's not like you're passing the ball, giving it back, let me run a play. It's just him taking it to the tank. You talk about all these turnovers, it's huge, and it might hurt his MVP candidate a little bit. We shall see if he ends the year averaging a triple-double. You think he's got to get the MVP, right? But James Harden's right there. And then we can even look across to the Eastern Conference, where we got LeBron James, where he's creeping up on almost averaging a triple-double. He's averaging 25 points a game, 8.8 assists, and 7.7 rebounds, and he is facilitating to the most. Him having 8.8 assists per game is on pace to be one of the NBA records for most assists per game by an NBA forward, and he is putting in the time. LeBron is playing like no other LeBron we've seen in the past couple years, and I literally mean that, because he is playing more minutes than he has played in the past 5 years. I've talked about it before. What has hurt LeBron's MVP case these past couple years is Curry's come along and tried to steal the king of the NBA title from him. It's he's taken a lot of nights off. He's taken a lot of rest time, but we're not seeing this year. He's actually second in the NBA in total minutes play, and he is putting the pedal to the metal because he's complaining left and right. It would be too ironic if he wasn't out there and going out there and performing because he's saying, I need playmakers. Well, LeBron James, you're the best in the world. You got Kyrie Irving on your team, one of the greatest playmakers in the NBA right now. Kevin Love, who was a huge playmaker himself. Of course, he's down with injury right now, but then you see him bringing in Kyle Korver, who has been absolutely hot. You want to talk about playmakers, let's talk about a three-point maker, because all he does is hit threes. So now we look at these Cleveland Cavaliers and what they've done the whole entire year, and they're led by LeBron James, and he's trying to put in his case to say, hey, I'm back. I want the MVP. Return it to the king.
I just don't see him winning it. It's because the way the award is set up. At the end of the day, LeBron James is the most valuable player in the league, no matter what. But this year, I think it has to go to James Harden, at least for the first half, because if anything, then I'm going to give it just because they're at the three seed. Nobody expected this, and they're killing it. Like, nobody expected the Thunder to be at the seventh seed, but they're dropping. Their position is not solidified. The Rockets are pretty much in the playoffs, and they're going to have a great seed because I don't see them falling off one bit. They're healthy, they're playing well right now, and I don't see nothing stopping James Harden. I think he's only going to get better, and he's always a clutch player. He gets it down in the crunch time. But for me on the East side, my two top MVP candidates are Isaiah Thomas and John Wall. John Wall's averaging over 20 and 10 and playing phenomenal and got these Washington Wizards at a three seed, overlapped Toronto, who's at the four, and Boston is only three games out from number one. And Isaiah Thomas is scoring the most fourth quarter points in over almost two decades. This man is crazy in the fourth, and I don't know how many games he had to come back right before the All-Star break, and he did it himself. And I did not like that call, like the game before the All-Star break there, which ended their winning streak against the Bulls, that little elbow foul. I was like, come on, bro, that was a fingertip foul. You know that didn't affect his shot. He's a professional. But Isaiah Thomas is killing it, and they didn't make a trade on the deadline, so they don't have any other bigs, but Brad Stevens has got that team under lock, and I think they might even end up taking over that number one position if Kevin Love can't get back. And LeBron James, you know he's going to end up taking some time off, and if anything happens to Kyrie, this team could end up dropping to three or four, but the fact is they have LeBron James, so no matter what, they're going to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals at the least, and if he's got the energy to do it, which I know LeBron has the fire, and he knows that his legacy is on the line at all times, because he even knows, I'm going to sit out the regular season, all these games, because at the end of the day, all you guys care about is how many rings I get, and that's the only thing, no matter what, history will ever talk about. So for him, I understand why he sit out. I know it sucks for the fans. You only get to see him once or twice a year, if you're lucky, but at the end of the day, this is a business. He's got to watch out for his body and do what he's got to do to make his case as one of the best players ever of all time.
Yeah, exactly. It's LeBron James' world, and we're just living in it, and the fans should be grateful because, he's like I said, he's playing more minutes than ever before, trying to get back in the MVP race, but you said it perfectly. That's exactly where I was going to next. Isaiah Thomas, you know what time it is. Fourth quarter, ooh, ice in the veins. That kid has been dominating in the fourth quarter, and he has been unstoppable for the Celtics, and a big reason why they are only two games back from LeBron James in that Eastern Conference. Like you said, they did not make any big trade moves. There was some rumors about Paul George, Jimmy Butler, a lot of things going on, but nothing came to fruition. So let's go ahead and talk about this NBA trade deadline and a lot of things that happened. Here's one thing that did happen, and Isaiah Thomas's former team, the Sacramento Kings, ended up trading Boogie Cousin to the New Orleans Pelicans for Buddy Hield and I guess a couple draft picks. I don't know what to make of it, but here's one thing to think about. The Sacramento Kings at one time had Isaiah Thomas, Boogie Cousin, and Hassan Whiteside all on the same team. They could not get to the playoffs or win any goddamn games. So this truly is a head-scratcher for me. It is a great move for the Pelicans. Get to pair up Anthony Davis and Boogie Cousins. The two Kentucky Wildcats will be playing together. Who knows, they might get Coach Calipari. Bring in John Wall next year, have the whole entire Wildcats just take over New Orleans. I think that's a huge move, but I don't understand it on the Sacramento side. Most people remember Buddy Hield from the NCAA tournament last year where he went off with Oklahoma. I guess Vlade Divac said that he thinks Buddy Hield could be the next Steph Curry. Well, he's not hitting too many threes so far this year. And here's the interesting stat that I heard is that Boogie Cousins has actually hit more three-pointers than Buddy Hield this year. I don't know how that's looking like the next Steph Curry, but Harnie, tell me, what do you think about Boogie Cousins going down to New Orleans and trying to boogie in Mardi Gras with Anthony Davis?
First, I think the way he found out was the funniest thing. Oh. In the middle of that post All-Star game press conference, and his agent just comes up real quick like, hey, bro, you got traded to the Pelicans.
And he's like, oh, for real? Yeah, for real? And then the next question is, hey, so how was your All-Star break? He's like, Man, I love it here in New Orleans. Like, what a coincidence he gets traded to New Orleans. Oh, I love it here in New Orleans.
And for me, one thing I got to say about Vlade Divac, I loved you as a player. That Sacramento Kings era team was the best to watch, those Laker matchups. But you do not go out to the public and say you had a better deal on the table after you make a shittier deal. You just do not go and tell the people that. Just say this was the best deal on the table and this is what we took. Now you're just making the entire front office look bad, especially the owner Vivek, who's done great things for the Kings already by building them a new stadium, which is phenomenal that I've heard and I've seen pictures. Yeah, and kept him in sack. But I just don't understand this. You're one spot, one game out of the eighth seed. This is the best you've done, especially with DeMarcus Cousins so far. The most games he's ever won in a season was 33. And you get rid of him and you stop everything. I know he's a nuisance. I know you probably won't be able to re-sign him. But did you think this was worth it? You got Buddy Hield. You brought back Tyreke Evans, who the majority of the seasons is injured. Buddy Hield is a rookie. And then Langston Galloway, who had his high points in his career on a crappy Knicks team because he got the time to play because they were pretty much tanking without Melo. This doesn't make sense. And the first round pick is a top three protected. So if it ends up becoming a great pick, you don't even get it. And all you get is a second rounder. Is that worth the best center in the league? I just don't understand it. And you threw in Omar Caspi. Why would you throw in another big man and get no other big man in return? I just don't understand what they're thinking. This was not a great call. I wish they told us what the other offer was, because he already came out and said it, and now it's got everybody curious, because I want to see how dumb are you really?
Really, how dumb are they? We know that they tried to make a deal with the Lakers, but the Lakers didn't want to give up Brandon Ingram and some of the young pieces. But yeah, it is truly a head-scratcher from the side of Sacramento. Like you said, DeMarcus Cousins, I would have thought he would have been traded like last year, 2 years ago, when they're absolutely garbage and looking for lottery picks. Instead, they're wasting their picks on hot sauce Nick Stauskas. But now, look at them. Like I mentioned, they had Isaiah Thomas, Boogie Cousin, and Hassan Whiteside all on the same team. Man, they even probably had Rudy Gay at the same time throwing all the pieces they had. But this front office truly is just falling apart, and they could not figure things out. Like you said, you can't come out and say, hey, we had a better trade, but we just didn't want to pull the trigger. I don't know. It truly is confusing, but hey, I'm sure New Orleans fans aren't complaining at all, because now the Pelicans have quite the dynamic duo. They call themselves Fire and Ice, Boogie in the Brow. I like that one a little bit better. But man, what a front court this is going to be. This is the first time that a front court has averaged a double-double since David Robinson and Tim Duncan back in the day. And this is who they're going to be compared to, because you're talking about size. We talked about last year, the Thunder giving the Warriors some problem last year with their big man with Cantors and Steve Adams. And now we're going to go ahead and look at now with the Pelicans trying to sneak up into that eighth spot. I think that could be some trouble for the Warriors if the Pelicans somehow squeeze into the playoffs. What do you think, Harney? You think with Jrue Holiday still there, but not too many weapons outside of Anthony Davis and Boogie Cousins, you think they can't sneak into the eighth spot and potentially give the Warriors some trouble?
Obviously, this is the best front court in the league, the best two big men playing together, the only ones that have even hit a 30 and 15 game this season and have done it multiple times. These guys can mesh together. They lived under the same lifestyle in college under Calipari. That's something they can relate to. That's something they can already go back to and already grow a friendship on. And I've already seen them. They look like they mesh. They know they're big guys, and I know they have respect for each other. And that's one thing for DeMarcus. He always knew in Sacramento that he was the centerpiece. It was his team. Pretty much, everybody around me is worse than me, so I got to be the big dog on campus. But now you're playing with Anthony Davis, MVP of the All-Star game, and arguably, I would say, better than you just because he has more overall game. He can play the defense and go outside and stretch four. But overall, as a team, I think it's going to take a little time, and they're lucky that the first game they get to play after the trade, it took 4 days after the All-Star break, so they get to start immediately. But for me, it's going to hurt their stock both ways. You don't expect them to put up the same numbers they're going to have, because they both need the touches, and everybody else does. But they definitely need some wings to get it going, because their wings are garbage, and this is a three-point shooting league. The league is progressing every year and just getting newer and newer, and the three-point shot is becoming extremely prevalent. Like, how do you expect to beat the Warriors when all you're getting is twos when they're shooting threes? That's the way I look at it. But at the end of the day, if we end up facing them in the A seed, I'm going to hate it. I'm going to absolutely hate it, because I just know that no matter what, we are going to get murdered down low, and I absolutely hate watching that, because when they're down low and they're just right next to the basket, they're easy buckets, and the Warriors could end up slipping up and losing one on a bad shooting night. And that's what it is, because DeMarcus is strong. He's always murdered the Warriors. Anthony Davis, he's always done well against the Warriors by himself. Now you add another option to make that little post area just a little bit more bigger for his lanky self. It's going to be a lot easier for them just to get easy buckets. And I just don't know if Draymond and Zaza can match up with that. One of them is going to get messed up. And if you set a couple back screens and get them open, it's going to be tough to even stop that. But at the end of the day, three is worth more than two. And with those wings, I just don't see them getting it done. But I do see them having a good shot to creep up in the playoffs because they're only 2.5 games out.
Yeah, exactly. They still have a chance in the West. And you said it perfectly. Three is worth more than two. And when the Warriors are on, they are on. And I think that will be a huge part of the matchup, like you said, with Zaza and Draymond trying to match up with the two big men. They're going to need Kevin Durant to come down off the three and come down and help them. And we're going to see that might lead to some open shots. But like you said, the Pelicans just don't have those amount of shooters on their team where they can really make the Warriors pay. So that could play to the defensive strategy of the Warriors. We'll see if we get there. This trade obviously had huge ramifications and was the biggest trade of this NBA trade deadline. I guess the biggest storyline is who didn't get traded. There were many, many rumors about Paul George, whether he was going to go to his hometown back in LA after he's got his dog named Kobe. It seems like the dominoes are set up perfectly to fall for him to go back to LA. I guess the Pacers are a little scared that he might just straight up leave them for nothing after the 2018 season. So they were shopping around a little bit, and I heard there were reports coming out of Boston that the Celtics were interested, but I guess the Pacers just wanted a little bit too much. They didn't want to give up that first pick from the Brooklyn Nets at its protected top three pick. It could turn out to play in the huge in the future. And then we want to talk about Jimmy Butler from the Chicago Bulls. Was he going to get traded? We could talk about Damian Lillard. His name was on the chopping block. All these superstars' names were coming up. Even Ricky Rubio for Derrick Rose, a straight-up trade that didn't make no sense at all. But all these big superstars' names were coming up, and nobody got traded. Nothing happened on the big deadline. A few little trades here and there. Harneet, did you have any trades in particular that stuck out?
Yeah, but it didn't happen on the deadline. It happened before even the Cousins trade. It's a Serge Ibaka trade to the Raptors. To me, that just changed up their whole dynamic, and I think that they could make a push also to get to that number one seed just because that's going to be a big test if the Cavs have to face them in the second round. Because with that big, because he's a stretch big, he can play defense, which is huge for them because who do they have down low? He could easily man up to Kevin Love if he's the only option down there, and he can guard him outside on the three, and that's where LeBron is going to have to do it all himself because you have Kyle Lowry, a good defender. I know Kyrie's great. I love Kyrie, but Kyle Lowry is playing well too, and how are you going to stop DeMar DeRozan? You can't expect Kyle Korver to do that because this man is averaging crazy numbers. His field goal percentage in the mid-range is ridiculous right now. This guy's putting up almost 30 every night, and if they're clicking and they get Ibaka going, playing on defense, and then get him to stretch out and hit that open three on a driving kick, this team could end up doing some damage. And honestly, I would love to see a Celtics-Raptors Eastern Conference Finals.
Oh, an Eastern Conference Final without LeBron James? I don't even think I can remember that far back in time. It seems like it's more likely than Tom Brady making the goddamn AFC Championship game because LeBron James truly is the GOAT of our generation, at least. So it'll be interesting to see what he's going to do coming down to the finals. But if it does end up the Raptors and the Celtics somehow, that could be one thing that plays huge because you said it is Serge Ibaka size. I think they're going to have to try to beat the Cavaliers with size because one thing that the Cavaliers are actually struggling in this year is defensive rebounding. You would have thought with Tristan Thompson getting paid all that money, he's huge on the board, but they really don't have anybody bigger than Tristan Thompson. He's getting beat on the boards, so Serge Ibaka could come in huge from there. The Celtics with Al Horford, I thought him, Isaiah Thomas, if they could have added one more shooter, there was the rumors about even Melo going to the Celtics. They really could have had a chance to make some disruptive pass in this Eastern Conference.
If they ended up getting Jimmy Butler or Paul George, this team would have looked ridiculous. Even with Melo, I just don't think that Melo would have meshed as well as a Jimmy Butler or a Paul George would have. But just because Avery Bradley's out, they don't really need another big because he would have played the same position as Al Horford and made it more difficult on him, who's only getting a little bit better as he's getting going because Isaiah Thomas is killing it for them. And with Avery Bradley out, they lose a little bit of defense. And if they could have got a Jimmy Butler who brings a little bit of defense, but he brings in that scoring and makes Isaiah Thomas's job a lot easier. If Isaiah's producing this well with what he's working with, especially with Marcus Smart, might be the Shaq in a full winner this year because that man has flopped way too many times. It's getting annoying. I loved you at Oklahoma State. Now I'm losing love, man. Go to play European football with that. But honestly, this team is, I've been loving what I'm seeing. I think it's because Brad Stevens has them going to his system and he has them disciplined. And I love this man when he's at Butler. This guy is a great coach and I knew it right when he got the job. And honestly, you got to give it up to Kevin McHale and Danny Ainge for getting this going. But if they made that trade, this would have been ridiculous. This team would have been set for the next few years of making a run to get to the finals every year. And LeBron's time is slowly coming up. I think he's probably got 2, maybe 3 years, depending on how much he has to play in the next upcoming seasons. But I think he still has 2, 3 more years where he's still just way better than everybody else. Still like number one, easily the best player. But these kids are young on Boston, And if they could have added a player like Paul George, a man that can shoot, create by himself, and still likes to pass. In Indiana, he's been the main guy the entire time. They relied on him to get scoring. But here, you have a bunch of different people that can get it going. And with young players, they got the energy to run back and forth and hustle. And for Paul George, that would have opened up his game. Because Isaiah Thomas, bold prediction. I just think that what Isaiah Thomas is doing, to me, is mesmerizing. If he can keep it up and keep that fourth quarter statistic and they end up being one game or two games back from that number one seed and actually putting a fight to the Cavaliers and making LeBron work for it, I think that he could be a good side because I think the coaches look at that and they see this guy. He's literally almost has a disability against everybody else just because of his size. And NBA's, everybody's huge. He has to look over towers. And this guy just gets it done in their face. And I absolutely love it. And that is my bold prediction. That I'm going to say Isaiah Thomas will be MVP of the NBA season. He's 5'8", 5'9". I'm not even going to give him any more than that. The little man just does it. And I love his attitude because he's like, this has happened all my life. And he says that on the court, it don't matter. And I love that.
You know what time it is. IT, the technician man, Isaiah Thomas is having a great year. And you said it. Add Jimmy Butler or add Paul George to the Celtics. And I truly believe that they would have had a chance to knock off this Cleveland Cavaliers team. Because you're talking about a lot of playmakers, a lot of star potential on that team. But it did not happen. And we're left here on trade deadline just talking about some lesser trades. Not too much happening in the East. Like you said, the big trades seem to happen before the trade deadline. We talked about Korver, we talked about Serge Ibaka, and now we're just going to keep on moving on to the West. We saw a couple of trades here and there. Obviously, the big one that we talked about was Boogie for Buddy Hield and a first-round draft pick. Well, first-round draft picks were getting flown around left and right. I mean, they even sent one off to the Lakers, got one for Lou Williams from the Rockets. So now Lou Williams joins the Rockets. I think that's actually an interesting one because he's not only going to be the number six man because Eric Gordon is tearing up, he's going to be the seventh man, and he's going to be a great scoring option. As a seventh man, he's going to be great with that second unit. If he can come in, spell James Harden, give him a little bit of break, and still give him some offensive scoring, it's just going to add more three-point shots to this already on pace for a historic three-point shooting team, Houston Rockets. We'll see how it plays out.
This man and Jamal Crawford are like the Hall of Fame six-man players. I kid you not. They're always in contention every year, and you know one thing they can do? Get buckets at any time they want. Lou Williams can score at will. The kid has been doing it since he's gotten in the career. He's literally made his living off being a sixth man and just getting it done in that second unit. And for him, it's easy when you know you're the best one out there, especially with that second unit. But the thing for him is this Rocket team can use that because that's where they've been struggling, is getting some point production and some defense on that second unit. But if you're scoring points, you're putting a lot more pressure on the other team to get it going and not letting them be complacent and be relaxed with how they run their offense. And so when you start speeding them up, and I know Lou Will loves to do that because you saw the Lakers play, he's running that Luke Walton stuff, same thing the Warriors were running last year, and they got it going. And this man has been putting up great numbers. I got him on my fantasy team. Hallelujah. And I know another team that's probably saying thank you to their prayers. The Mavericks actually came up on this one. I like the trade they made. They got Nerlens Noel, and they got rid of Andrew Bogut, Justin Anderson, and 2017 first-round pick, but it's protected in the number 1 through 18. So still, they have a good chance because they're only 3 games out of the playoffs. But this trade is huge because they needed an inside presence. They spent so much money on Harrison Barnes, Wesley Matthews to get those wings ready. But now you have a down low presence who hasn't had his time to shine because of injuries and just because the Sixers just kept racking up centers and big men. He had no time to play, especially Joel Embiid. This was his year to play in Nerlens Noel. And look what happened. Joel Embiid got his 2 years rest, and he came out, and he's pretty much putting up numbers that are historic per 48 minutes, and I can't wait to watch that man play. But Nerlens Noel has talents. Man played at Kentucky under Calipari. He's been a great recruit since high school, since he was young. This man's long, lanky. He's developing his outside shot, and when he played this year, when he got the minutes, he did not do bad. He put up a double-double on a few occasions. So this man is going to do good for them because they need an inside presence, and honestly, they got rid of Bogut. That was, I think they just needed to make some room on their space and just get rid of this cap because they were paying a lot of money that they dragged over from the Warriors contract.
Yeah, exactly. Getting all those players from the Warriors. Had to unload a few on Andrew Bogut. We all know his injury pass in the league and how he's going to go to the Sixers. Well, they might actually just waive him or might try to trade him on. It'll be interesting to see if Andrew Bogut gets potentially picked up by one of these playoff teams later in the year. Might get some time to rest his body. But you said it perfectly. The Philadelphia Sixers, it seemed like they eventually had to give up one of their bigs. They had so many of them. They were just stockpiling goods. And you say, all right, when's the trade coming? And now we see the trade finally comes as they relieve. And it seemed like they really do just care about the draft pick because obviously they don't care about Andrew Bogut too much. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens as the Dallas Mavericks, as you said, are still alive in this Western Conference. Because in the first year, it seems like forever we're going to see a team with with a losing record getting the 8th seed in the Western Conference, not just only the Eastern Conference. But the Dallas Mavericks were not the only team that tried to add a big man or two to their team in this playoff run. We're going to look at the Oklahoma City Thunder trying to get some more help. Poor Russell Westbrook, it seemed like they need some more shooters. Cameron Arden Payne has been hitting some shots lately, but they go ahead and trade him to the Chicago Bulls, and they ended up getting Taj Gibson and Dougie McDermott. I'm talking Dougie McBuckets. You want to talk about shooting? This man can shoot the lights out in college. Hasn't translated too well to the NBA. Had a few moments with the Bulls, a couple big games. He was a Rising Star Challenge, all that good stuff for the youngins. But I think this might be some help, because we think about it, the Thunder, what's their number one way to beat the Warriors? It's with size. So now if they can add Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott to space the floor even a little bit more, to kind of fill that Serge Ibaka role, I think maybe the two of them combined, because obviously neither of them are at the athletic ability or have the shooting ability combined to Serge Ibaka. But I think this trade will play a little bit into later down in the series with these big men for the Thunder. Harnate, what's your opinion on OKC trying to make some last minute moves?
Honestly, I think they win. They win on this one for sure, because they got rid of mediocre talent who's had only little bright spots for young talent. Well, Taj Gibson's been in the league for a little bit, but Doug McDermott, he has a high ceiling potential, and that's what you draft. You draft potential. He's just been in a position where he's not going to get that time. He's had Jimmy Butler in front of him the entire time. He's had injury problems. But you're right. He's had those times where he's putting up buckets. He's getting those buckets for his name. But Taj Gibson is the one thing that I like, because that man is physical. And you add that with Adams at any point, that's going to be tough for any team to deal with, because Taj Gibson, I watched him play at USC when he was in college. This man would be taking nothing from no one. He was the one dishing it out. I know you don't never get to see it just because he doesn't get that many minutes, but this man, he does everything. You're not going to put up crazy stats, but he works hard, and that's something that every team needs. And the little things do it, the intangibles. It's like what Bogut did for the Warriors. His stats don't show it. People said, oh, he sucked for us, but people don't realize he created everything for us. He stopped people from driving down to the paint, and that's what those bigs do. And Adams, who I think is one of the most fearful centers in the league, just because he will talk smack to anybody, and he goes straight up, and he's getting better and better. So this is a great trade for OKC, but still, I just don't think that they still have the wings to do it. Now you have Oladipo and you put Doug McDermott out there, but you lose Anthony Morrow, who's one of the best three-point shooters in the league, because I remember, because he was a Warrior at one point, and this man even had a three-point contest of one. So I'm telling you right now, I just don't think that this was the perfect move. I think it was great. I'd give it a B+, but I just think to get that A level, I think they could have got maybe a shooter, but then again, the Bulls have no shooters. So that's obviously why they made this trade, because earlier in the year when they made that trade for Tony Snell for Michael Carter-Williams, I just didn't understand. I was like, why bring in another guard that can barely shoot mid-range jumpers when, you know, as I've reiterated, this is a three-point league, especially the Warriors, because at the end of the day, if you're in the East or the West and you know you're going to end up making it to the finals or have any aspirations of getting there, you know that this is the team to beat. And if you can't put up like 130 on a nightly basis, which is ridiculous to say, I just don't think that you're going to be able to get it done without hitting 23s a game. And I just don't think Oklahoma City's got it, because Westbrook is not a good shooter. And with that 41% usage rate holding the ball, the majority of the time it goes down to 12, and then he decides, like, I might go or I'm not going to go. Or he just drives right in the first hole right when he's bringing the ball down. But hey, hold on, we never even talked about this. Remember when he traveled against the Warriors? He was taking steps.
Oh, Shaq in a full
quadruple double.
Number one nominee of the year. This man was walking. It's so funny. You see Steph Curry run up. He's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And Russ literally says, I don't know. Like, he looked like he was just stone coming out of a hot box for the first time of his life and entering the world of unknown mysteries. Russell Westbrook, what a brain fart. But you mentioned it, the Oklahoma City Thunder were trying to add some big men, because that seems like that might be the only way to beat this Warriors team, if you cannot shoot the three ball. But like you said, every team's going to have to try to add some threes. Every team's going to try to add some size to try to take out this Warriors team, because they truly are looking unstoppable. But this trade line, we didn't see too many big moves. We didn't see the superstars get traded left and right. We saw them stay put. I think that is kind of a factor of teams just saying, hey, it's going to be Warriors versus Cavaliers part three. Why should we even bother giving up draft picks? We need to rebuild anyways, try to get one of the next superstars. So I think it does come into factor, because that's what everybody's already conceded. That's going to be Warriors and Cavaliers.
And honestly, the one reason I understand why getting all these picks is good, if you're getting it for this year, just because this draft is going to be deep. There's a lot of great basketball talent, like, potentially to come out of this draft. So if I can completely understand why teams want to get up in that lottery pick, because you're going to get some talent that can definitely help your team, especially in the top 10. So for me, the trade that the Rockets did, they lost their first round pick, but it's going to be a high pick, so it wasn't too bad for them. But other teams like the Kings, they get a first and second round pick from this year from the Pelicans. That is huge for them in their rebuilding process. But the first round pick is top three protected. So it's like those little things that come and go that I just wouldn't make a deal if I knew that the protected pick, especially when you're giving up like a person like Boogie. But I just want to mention this. We were talking about the 3-point shooting and the news came up. Darren Williams got waived. They're buying him out. The Mavericks are buying him out and he's pretty much going to sign with the Cavaliers. And I hate that because that's a guard who's a veteran and he can shoot the three consistently.
Hey, that's the Cavaliers adding more pieces left and right. I've even heard they're even looking at Larry Sanders trying to add some more size.
I definitely do not want that.
Yeah, the Cavaliers trying to add pieces left and right. And as I said, that is kind of influenced teams to not make moves because everybody knows that it's just the Cavaliers and the Warriors, the two top dogs. But hey, we saw last year, Oklahoma City took out the Spurs and then they almost took out the Warriors. Of course, they had Kevin Durant and now Kevin Durant is playing for the Warriors. So it's going to be a lot harder this year. But we didn't even mention it. The Spurs, well, we did mention it. The Spurs have been playing great this year. They're sitting four games behind the Warriors at 43-13. Kawhi Leonard is having a great year shooting from the field. He's having one of his highest all-time field goal percentages, and he is doing great things, looking like potentially another defensive player of the year and also inserting him into MVP candidacy. But let's go ahead and look at the Western and the Eastern Conference teams, because as you said, it's the Warriors, the Cavaliers, and it seems like teams that could be competitive and teams that are just trying to get away from the eighth spot because they're trying to tank for the first time. And I can remember we're going to have teams with losing records in both the Western and the Eastern Conference get in the playoffs. Man, we got to cut this playoff system down somehow, but let's look at the NBA standings and what the playoffs would look like if the season ended today. In first place, the Golden State Warriors, surprise, surprise. Second place, the San Antonio Spurs are four games back. The Houston Rockets are in third, eight games back. The Clippers sitting at fourth place, trying to get healthy. They are 12 games back. The Utah Jazz are in fifth place at 12 and a half games back. Memphis is 14 games back. Oklahoma City sitting in the seventh seed, 15 and a half games back. And then the eighth seed truly is wide open. We got Denver sitting there at 25-31, 22 games back. They got some young talent that's playing better, but this eighth seat really is up for grabs. Harney, if you see anybody jumping out, I know we talked about the Pelicans. That's my pick to see if they can come back and get into the eighth seat. Maybe the Minnesota Timberwolves that held on to Ricky Rubio with their young talent. If they can finally get things on track with Tom Thibodeau, maybe they can sneak in the eighth seat. Harney, what do you got looking forward for this Western Conference?
One, that Clippers Utah matchup is going to be amazing. Don't underlook Gordon Hayward and what that team is doing. But this A seed is literally wide open. You go from 8 to 12, and it's only three games apart. So this is where it's going to come down to the wire. Every game is crucial to these teams. In New Orleans, they can make a push, but I just don't know how many games they can afford to lose before getting to mesh right. And they end up playing the Nuggets, I believe, three times still left in the season. So, which is crazy because that three games makes up the difference and puts you up into eighth. It's going to be hard for Oklahoma City to lose their lead. They're up 6.5 games from the eighth spot. Some teams would have to go on a 10-game win streak and they would just have to be losing. And Russell Westbrook have to sit out games, which he's going for that triple-double for the average for the season. I know that for a fact. He's not missing any time unless he's forced to. And the Sacramento Kings, are after the trade, they're going down. They're going to start dropping. Portland's been the biggest question mark all season. I understand you lost a couple pieces like Wesley Matthews, but still, they are just not producing the way they are. And that's why Damian Lillard's name came up in trade rumors, which I thought was ridiculous. I hate how they're blaming him. But they weren't blaming him last year when he was dropping 53 at home and matching Steph Curry and getting that W. So for me, that kid is a baller. I just don't understand how you wouldn't build around him because he's unselfish. That man loves to pass. I just think that sometimes CJ McCollum takes too many shots and too many ill-advised shots because that's all he really is just a pure scorer. That's what he was at Lehigh. So for me, I think the New Orleans Pelicans are going to have to fight with the Blazers if the Nuggets don't continue their progress because they've gotten better and better as time has gone by. But the only problem is I just don't think the trades they made are good enough to get them there with DeMarcus Cousins just out there. And if Damian and CJ McCollum start clicking, because they've lost too many games where it's came down to the wire. There's a lot of games. There are probably at least five games that I can recall that they lost within 5 points. So this is a team that's always in games, but they just can't get it done because they don't have a real low post presence. And they got rid of Plumlee. So I just don't know the moves that they're trying to make. They might even be looking toward a pick next year because there's a lot of big talent, but still, they're still in it somehow, which is ridiculous. I hate this. There should not be a team allowed under 500 to make the playoffs. But still, I think the Pelicans are going to get that AC. They're going to squeeze right in. I just don't see Gallinari staying consistent to keep the Denver Nuggets at the AC.
Hey, my boy Gallinari, him and Young Joe Kick out there balling out for the Denver Nuggets. It should be interesting to see what's going to happen in that AC. But you mentioned it, someone's going to get in with a losing record. And how is that going to happen? You need to cut this off at six teams, maybe cut down the playoffs a little bit. This is happening for the first time in the Western Conference, for the first time that I can remember. It seems like it's becoming a yearly thing over in the Eastern Conference. And I used to complain, well, just let the 10th top seeds from the Western Conference come in and kick out the bottom two from the East. But now everybody's at the bottom, and it really does show how top-heavy the NBA is now with the Golden State Warriors at the top and with the Cleveland Cavaliers at the top. Let's go ahead and look at the Eastern Conference. The Cavaliers are at 39-16, first place in the Eastern Conference, but Boston's only three games back at 37-20, and Washington's round and tail also at 34-21, five games back. The Toronto Raptors are seven games back in that fourth seed. The Atlanta Hawks are in that fifth seed, 7.5 games back. The Pacers are in that sixth seed, holding on to Paul George, but they are 11 games back. Chicago Bulls held on to Jimmy Butler, but they're 12 games back. And the Detroit Pistons are now sitting in that eighth seed with the losing record, 13 games back. It's going to be interesting to see what's happening in this Eastern Conference. We've talked about the Knicks and the supposed super team, Charles Oakley getting choked out at courtside. We got crazy things going on with Phil Jackson, LeBron James, the posses. No one knows what's going to figure out with New York, but they still got a lot of talent, and they're still only four games back from making that AC. Also, the Miami Heat started off terrible, but all of a sudden went on a huge win streak. They could make some noise. Harney, do you see anybody from the Eastern Conference sneaking into that AC and putting up a challenge for the Cavaliers?
The Miami Heat have been on a roll, and they've literally just been riding Deion Waiters' back. That man has played incredible in the last 2 weeks going into the All-Star game. They went 8-2 in their last 10, but to me, I just think that the Milwaukee Bucks are going to get it done on Giannis Antetokounmpo's back, because that man, did you see him at the All-Star game?
The Greek Freak.
He teabagged Curry, and I liked it. That's how good that dunk was. And Curry even knew the next time he was coming down, he just laid on the floor holding his head. He's covered like, up. No, he wasn't ready.
No.
But honestly, this is a bold prediction. I'm going to say that Washington is going to end up with the number two seed, only because I think John Wall's going to get it done, and I feel like if they do, I think you have to put him in the MVP talks. I think you have to put his name in there just because they've gone 9-1 in their last 10, and I believe that the other positions in the East are really solidified. I don't see the Bulls going down too much. I think D-Wade and Jimmy Butler will be able to get it done. They've had some close games, but I just don't see the Detroit Pistons having enough firepower, especially when they try to get rid of their best players. I just don't know how psyche is going to affect them, because every game at this point counts. You're already 57 games in. You only have about 25 left, so what are you going to do? And every game is crucial, especially when every team behind you is only a game back. You lose one night, they win, you're already knocked out. So for me, the Milwaukee Bucks can get it done. They're only one game out, and they're my team that I believe that is going to get in there. And the only team to fight is going to be the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see what happens in that Eastern Conference. We'd like to talk about All-Star break as the midway point of the NBA season, but you mentioned it. We're past the midway season point. There's only a handful of games left, so if you're trying to make a challenge, the trade deadline is up. You can't add many more pieces. You got to go full throttle now, and we're looking at this Eastern Conference. Half the teams I just named off are trying to get rid of their best player, so what does that say about the Eastern Conference? There's not really too much competition, and that comes down to the final question. Will we see another repeat? Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry versus LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers part three with the new addition Kevin Durant. That's the only scenario I see happening in my mind, unless there's some major injuries or something crazy. I don't want to totally discount the Spurs and the Clippers, the Rockets, they can still score, and Russell Westbrook with things he can do, but it really does seem like the Cavs have the easier path. But I do think it will be Cavs, Warriors once again in the finals.
Oh, most definitely. There's amazing teams all across the board, especially top heavy, as you said. But just to me, it'd be hard for the Warriors and Cavs to lose in a seven game series. One game, understandably, but to beat them seven times in about 2 weeks, and especially because you're only going to play three at home, even if you get that, because you're going to be playing on the road the majority of the time, especially those first two games. If you don't pull one out at least, good luck to even try to win the series. But for me, this Milwaukee team, if they get in that eighth seed, they could make LeBron work. They put up some good fight because Giannis is long. Giannis can play defense, and he doesn't back down either. And then think of the potential matchup they'd have to face if they had to work that hard. LeBron had to put in that much energy against the Bucks, and then he has to face the Raptors, who went seven games last year. So to me, that's going to be crazy. And that the second round matchup, then they would have to face the winner of Boston and Washington if the standing stayed as the way it is. And that's going to be a tough road for the Cavs to get through. I think that this year they're going to have it tougher than the Warriors did last year. How we ended up having some couple games, you know, Curry falling down, hurting his knee a little bit against the Rockets and stuff. But the Cavs had pretty much an easy way. They swept the first two, and then they finally got a real test. But still, we ended up having to play so many more games. And for LeBron, for how much minutes he's already putting down, with Kevin Love still being out, if anything happens to any other piece on that team, because J.R. Smith was out for days. They wanted to shop Shumpert. How does he feel? He didn't get shopped. This is going to be a tough team because I don't – as players, I'm like, yeah, okay, LeBron, you're the king. You know, yeah. Literally your nickname, you're the king of the team, you're the King Cleveland. How do you put that on a psyche on some guy to be wanting to fight for you, to want to, like, put his life on the line for you and, like, put that charge out to get your team the bucket? Because at the end of the day, you know that, like, nobody else is getting recognition like LeBron is. Everybody's always going to know LeBron did this for Cleveland. They're not going to remember, like, honestly, at the end of the day, they're going to remember LeBron's block more than Kyrie's game-winning bucket, yeah, as sad as that sounds.
Yeah, as terrible as it is because Kyrie was the one making the huge play, it's going to be LeBron's block that makes it to a statue outside
even
of Cleveland's
arena. Even though that's, like, his signature chase-down block, but everybody that's seen basketball for the first time just thought he just did it for the first time. I saw him do that in high school.
Yeah, exactly. I saw him do that in the McDonald's All-American game back in the day. Exactly. But LeBron James, you talk about one of a kind, but good. I want to see him go through more of a test this year because you mentioned last year with the two sweeps, pretty quick, pretty easy. It seemed like he cakewalked in, but we've mentioned it all the minutes that he's been playing this year. He's putting more tax on his body and he's getting up there in age. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays off in the playoffs because the reason why he was taking so much time off was because he realized, I already got my MVP trophies. All I'm playing for is NBA titles. I'm trying to catch Jordan. All I need is rings. I got to save my body for the postseason. And that's why most of the time, the NBA first half of the season is pretty boring because you don't even see guys playing hard. You don't even see them playing full speed. But now LeBron is out on a mission with the few injuries to his team. He's trying to prove that the East is still his to dominate. And I don't see anybody really disrupting that path.
No, you're completely right. It's always like the first 2-3 weeks is where the good teams play hard just to get that edge on that number one seed and solidify their spot because they know they're going to win the majority of the games. But this is going to be, if he makes it, it's going to be 8 straight finals. How many extra games played is that? That's ridiculous. It's a crazy amount. But that's like one thing they always talked about Kobe. He did USA every time after that. Yeah. You know, that's like a lot of miles that you put on, a lot of basketball miles that you end up putting on your own time off the NBA season, like off your job. So which is crazy because you know this man has gotten there. This will be 8 straight times. That's no matter what, at least 4 games every series just to get there. And those are playoff games. Those count as at least 2 regular season games for how much pressure and like you have to exert out of your body to get those W's. I don't care how easy it is. LeBron goes hard no matter what because he knows he's got to get it done himself. The team only works with 10. That team would not work if Kyrie was the one running it.
Yeah, it's definitely going to see how all these extra miles pile up on LeBron James because he's played so well before in these postseasons because he's had all this rest. But him going forward, you mentioned all these miles that add up. A man who took some miles off his body was Stephen Curry. He ended up not playing in the Olympics. Said, I want to rest my body, see how things go. Because the Warriors truly did go through a much harder road last year, playing against the Thunder, going down 3-1, almost being eliminated. Their bodies seemed like it was taxed. And we saw Andrew Bogut eventually get hurt in that series. I don't know how much conditioning, stamina played into that. But it's going to be huge in a 7-game series. The Warriors versus the Cavs, how much their bodies are rested. Because if LeBron's got to go through the test, it could be a bigger challenge for him. But this is all the rematch that we want to see. It's going to be Cleveland versus the Warriors. That's my opinion. And to wrap this up, Harneet, this is February. You want to guarantee me a victory already?
I think I'd be stupid not to, honestly. But best believe I'm knocking on wood just because I don't want to see what happened last year. That's why I just get the losses, get the number one seed, and make sure that you guys are clicking at all cylinders when it comes time to play because I want to see sweeps. I want to see you guys rest. We need our second unit to get some time in these big playoff games and let their emotions just, you know, let it ride. We got some new players and stuff. So we got even that Devontae Weber. He's never been in a real intense game, and he's been playing well because his defense. And that's going to be needed from Patrick McCall and Weber and all our guards. And Livingston and Iguodala are going to have to run that second unit. And our biggest X factor to get us the victory, which it did 2 years ago, the most unstoppable force when it comes down to the second unit is Sean Livingston. Last finals, he was bricking short, and it could be all that time put in just because we had to play a lot. 2 7-game series of pretty much playing finals basketball every damn time, and that's just tough on your body, especially for a little man like Steph when we didn't have a real other outlet besides Clay going berserk game 7. But still, this team has it. It has everything it needs to get done. It has the defense, which creates the offense. Now it's all about being disciplined and having conviction and not getting complacent when you think that you automatically have the win. Because I don't know how many times I've already seen them blow a 20-point lead, and that is the most frustrating thing ever, because it never ends up being the second unit. The second unit, yeah, they might lose a couple points, you know, they might lose 6 out of the 20, but then our offense comes back and we just sluggish. We just think that we can score instantly at any time, which, yes, we can, but don't rely on that. You work for your stuff at every moment, and best believe that we will be champions at the end of the season.
Hey, they definitely have a strong chance of doing that. The Golden State Warriors, I've mentioned it, they're on pace for 69 wins this season. It's not quite the record 73, but if they did this, that would be 3 straight seasons where they had at least 67 wins, which would break a record set by those historic 90 Bulls.
And I never even mentioned this the entire time. Man, we are dropping dimes, averaging over 30 assists a game. That might be be my favorite part, because we're getting easy buckets, and this is too easy when the floor is this spaced out and we're this unselfish. But it's going to all go, and I cannot wait, because one thing that these guys are having is fun. And at the end of the day, why do we play sports?
Hey, to have fun, and why we do this podcast, to have some goddamn fun here on the Bay's Golden
Days.
Yes, sir. And it's always fun when the Bay Area is winning, so you know we're going to continue to cover the Golden State Warriors, the Bay Area's team from Oakland to SF. It doesn't matter where they're playing. There's only one basketball team in the Bay, and that's the Golden State Warriors. So we're going to cover all the drama down the run. KD and Westbrook, are they going to feud more? We'll see if he can keep on averaging a triple-double. We'll see all these huge storylines and keep you covered here on the Bay's Golden Days on everything that's going to happen the rest of this NBA season. And then we got the baseball season coming up, so you know the Bay's Golden Days is going to try to get Trevor Dyer back in town to break down the even year Giants, even though it is an odd year. We'll see what happens with that, because the Bay's Golden Days is going to give you a full baseball preview, repping the Giants and the A's and all the biggest offseason free agencies and trades. And then we'll even go and look ahead to NFL, because right when you thought it was over, it's back. We got the NFL Combine coming up, and the NFL Draft is within a month or two away. So we'll talk about everything that happens. Golden Days is going to keep on trying to put up podcasts more and more every week. I'm going to be trying to bring you some UFC podcasts. We got UFC 209 coming up. Tyron Woodley versus Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, the rematch. And Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov. Oh, what a fight that's going to be. We'll break down that for you. And my man Harneet's even going to be uploading some FIFA podcasts. I shouldn't say FIFA. It's not a soccer game, but I don't even know what I'm talking about. Tell him the Euro Cup.
For all you soccer fans, I'm talking about international soccer, the European football, the goods. I'm going to be coming out with podcasts on that, discussing the Premier League, Champions League, Europa League, every single big league, Bundesliga, La Liga, Calcio, in Serie A. I'm going to be talking about everything. And best believe it is March Madness in a couple weeks, and we'll be bringing you that too with a whole bracket and letting you know what our picks are. And hopefully you can try and beat us.
Hey, and you can try to win some money too, because with all these games, all these matches, all these fights, you know it's time for Straight Cash, homie. The most famous segment of the Bay's Golden Days. We'll be making its return weekly. We'll be trying to update on social media, on our websites, weekly, daily bets as much as we can. Keep on rocking with the Bay's Golden Days. You can follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at Bay's Golden Days. Check out our website at bgdsports.com. Continue to download and subscribe on Google, iTunes, and on SoundCloud now. Thank you for listening once again. We'll see what the Warriors got in store for the second half of the NBA season. You know what it is, Bay's Golden Days, baby.
BGD Sports, let's get it.
Yay!
Golden, 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 golden.
Steady gold, pony boy.